They used to bounce messages across the Earth.
Shows. Everyone in the old world had a show.
Do you think there's still somebody out there? Sending shows?
Who knows? Those are the planes of silence.
The following program is intended for mature audiences.
Just for the crack, as a gift to the two of you, right? As the start of it all, like, I don't know how, you know, did he woo you, did you woo him in the Heel of the Hunt?
He wooed me.
He wooed you. It was a wonderful thing. Good man yourself, Scott. Well done. I don't know what he said, what words he said. All men have a different kind of technique for luring the ladies in, right? And what magic words they say just to create the mood. I always use one word. I always used to go, so. Just at the right moment, it raises the temperature just a tiny bit, right? So that they, and if she goes, well, you go, well, hey, and you're in, right? And if she goes, fuck off, you go, fuck off yourself, I wasn't even talking to you. It's an immaculate technique. But all men use exactly the same words when it comes to breaking up, right? I'm just giving the warning to all the ladies here, but I'll channel it through yourself. What's your name, by the way?
Joe.
Joe, okay. All guys have the same technique when it comes to breaking up with somebody. One word that they use in that situation, right? Watch out for this, Joe. Scott ever comes back from a difficult day at work and goes, listen. It's over. It's finished. Your job is to get out of there with your head held high. You will be the winner in that situation. If he ever goes, listen, you immediately go, I fucked your brother. You're out of it. This is Scott is on the back, but he's going, whoa! It's particularly good if he doesn't have a brother. He works twice as well in that situation. He's going, but I have no brother. And you go, yes, you do. He tracked you down for many years, and he came here today, and I fucked him. And then you're out the door. But the thing is, I may not, you know, set this in context. I've given that advice before, but I haven't really given enough conditions. I don't mean, Joe, any time he says the word listen. I don't mean, like, you're walking along a beach in the Seychelles and he cups your beautiful face and goes, do you know what sound I love more than any sound in nature? The sound of the waves lapping against a tropical beach. Or if ever lying in a spoons position, snuggle deeply, you're all snuggle, like that, like whatever. It's 3 a.m. under the duvet and you feel terribly safe and warm and wonderful. And suddenly Scott sits bolt upright in the bed. Listen. That'd be a bad time. Suddenly go, I fucked your brother. He's like to go, that's very interesting, but there's an axe murderer climbing in the window downstairs. Frankly, unless you fucked him as well, I should prioritise.
Are you ready? Are you ready?
We're ready. We're ready. Yeah, we're ready.
California, land of fantasy and make-believe. It's the Vino Veritas. Featuring host, writer, humorist, experiential mystic, raconteur, and parallel parking expert, Tom Savino. Now, here he is with Savino Veritas in Wine the Truth, Tom Savino.
Good evening, laddies and lasses. I wake up in the morning with the dew in me shoes. What the hell did you do in me shoes? It's St. Patrick's Day. Faith in Bigora. Tom Savino, old Savian here. We're here on Savino Veritas, live in Burbank, California. And actually, we're going to be live from Little Timmy Nolan's in the Toluca Lake. And we're going to hear the music when they're doing me shows and stop doing it on me shows. And anyway, happy St. Patrick's Day, everyone. Tom Savino here from Burbank, California. Aye, give me a beer, lassie. Aye, you fine lassie with a classy chassis and a nice assie. And we're going to give me some of that green beer because it's just like to do in me shows and stop doing it on me shows. I am not Irish, as you have probably know that, I hope. And we want to lift a glass right now, lift a glass and wish the very health of Mr. Frank Cotolo of the Cotolo Chronicles. Oh, Cotolo. Of the family O'Cotolo from the Dunberry Bachenheimer. Now I'm getting German on me. Getting German here. What's with this? Must be the beer. Don't give me German beer. Give me a green beer, not a German beer. And anyway, it is St. Patrick's Day, and we're here in Timmy Nolan's with the live Irish music in the background there. A fantastic group of singers and percussionists and instruments that we'll be hearing throughout the evening. But we are going to celebrate the Irish and the Irish Americans. Yes, the Irish and the Irish Americans we're going to have tonight. Perhaps the funniest Irish American I could think of, and that, of course, is George Carlin. George Carlin will be joining us. Dara O'Brien from Ireland has some very funny material. Deirdre O'Kane, lassie, who has some very funny material. And Reginald Hunt, an Irish nigger, he calls himself, and actually he would be talking about that. He's a black person, and he is very funny and has some things to say about Irish and Irish humor. And Dusty Young, an Irish comic. So join us, sit back and have a beer, and don't drive if you're listening in the car and you're driving, pull over and stop at Timmy Nolan's in the local lake and have a beer with me right now. We're live and you can have a beer with me here. It's on me. If you come to Timmy Nolan's now, I'll get you a beer, a green one, a red one, whatever kind you want. I'll get you one of those lagers, I'll get you a smaller, I'll get you whatever you want. Yes, right here. On Savino Veritas.
Veritas is satire spelled backwards. With a V for victory.
There would be no Savino Veritas if it were not for Frank Cotolo, Master Frank Cotolo of Cotolo Chronicles, the show that has been on for many years here on SRN1 and is responsible for my being on the air here. And I really thank him for that and want to wish him the very best and hope he gets well soon. Perhaps he's listening tonight. And make sure you take those antibiotics, Mr. Cotolo, and don't forget to get the probiotics after you take your antibiotics to replenish the friendly bacteria that you've killed with the antibiotics. Of course, we don't have, like, super antibiotics that just kill the bacteria that needs to be killed. And with pneumonia, you have to just go nuclear, so to speak, and kill all the bacteria. But you will be killing also the friendly bacteria. You need to replenish that with your probiotics. Take heavy doses of probiotics after your antibiotic regime is finished. And I recommend, I have no connection to this company whatsoever, but Healthy Trinity. It's a little pricey, and it must be refrigerated and all that, but if you get the Healthy Trinity probiotics, I think you will be back to your health, back to your immune system, getting back to health. And I hope you get well soon, Master Frank Cotolo, and that you will be on Cotolo Chronicles next week and every week on Thursday nights just before my show here on SRN1. And Mr. Frank Cotolo, your listeners, I'm sure, miss you. And we all miss you. And I will not be here next week. So just some, you know, things to some cross the T's and dot the I's. That's right, right? Is that right? My brain is not working. It's all these, this beer really does something to me. And it's a, you cross the T's and dot the I's. You don't cross the I's and dot the T's. That would be crazy. So let's get back to, let's get to some of this Irish humor we're talking about as we sit here slowly nursing our drinks here at Timmy Nolan's Interlocal Lake at the Savino Veritas Live. So thank you for joining us this evening. I hope you have a happy and safe St. Patrick's Day and no hangovers tomorrow. Let's go to Dara O'Brien. Right now.
If you go to the wrong website, it'll give you a little shock so you don't go on the website.
Yes,
it does. But surely if you go on a website that you shouldn't really be on, you just delete history, don't you? I mean, the tricky bit is not deleting history. The tricky bit is then going on all the innocuous websites afterwards so as it doesn't look like you've deleted history. That's the tricky bit, isn't
it? History seems to be very empty in this computer because I saw you on it all leaving yesterday.
Yeah, I never touched the delete
history. I've never asked like that, yeah. Yes. Private browsing, Andy, private browsing. my favourite member of the Army Corps, private browsing. Good afternoon, private browsing. Are you on duty again? I certainly am, Dara. I shall be protecting you from any inappropriate sites. Private browsing, performing for duty. Pants down, private browsing in here.
I shall protect your browsing while you shop for gifts for your wife. That is apparently what private browsing was invented for.
I love that. I've got private browsing on because I'm shopping for some gifts for my wife. Oh, really? You seem to be buying her pornography. Are you sure this is the gift she particularly wants? Papa Brothing! Reporting for
she duty. Told me that her favourite film as a child was Double Fist and Fist.
Private Brothers has never had to work under these conditions before. He's mainly used for shopping for gifts.
Private Brothers is retraining as an electrician.
Why did you leave the army? I saw some things.
You were there, man.
You were there. You didn't see what I saw. The first casualty of war, my friend. Your private browsing, the first casualty of war is innocence. Private browsing. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know why I feel like Benny Hill. Private browsing, at your service.
Benny Hill would do.
No, it'd be like, you know, the paperclip that would appear. It seems to
just... It looks like you're buying some pornography.
small animated soldier came out and said, do you want to look at the porn? Private Browser going to help you with that. I'm amusing myself here. It's the last record of a long summer, you know? Literally, I've got to enjoy this because in 3 days' time I'll be going, over the next 12 weeks, 20 candidates will be putting themselves on sugar.
Private Browsing's going to get some visitors.
He's going to get some fucking hammering.
I think your penis is going to get some corporal punishment.
There'll be some major damage. And general recklessness. What new trend and Colonel Abrams?
That was it.
Sorry, we'll bring it back.
Lost it.
Kern Labens is great, though. None of you remember... Do any of you even remember Kern Labens? Anyway, he sang a song called Trapped. It was really good.
I can't get out. I'm trapped like a fool, I'm in a cage.
I'm like a man in a cage. I'm so in love with you, love with you, love with you. All right. Sorry, would you like me to carry on with the show? Whatever.
You boys have got a shared past. We can only imagine that.
Veritas is satire spelled backwards. With a V for victory.
It's the Fabulous Geek Show.
All tied up, ready.
Veritas is satire spelled backwards.
JuiceTalk.com.
Veritas is satire spelled backwards. With a V for victory.
Savino Veritas in Wine the Truth. This is Artist D.
And Anne-Marie from Up All Night on 4 Culture Radio.
Have you got any wine, Anne-Marie?
I'm completely intoxicated.
We love to wine. We drink wine. We listen to Savino Veritas every week at JuiceTalk.com. Don't we love Tom?
Hi, Tom.
Hi, Tom.
How you doing?
Yeah, that was the Artist D and Anne Marie, and I totally recommend you listen to their show. You can listen to all of their archive shows, and all of my archive shows, and all of Frank Atolo's archive shows, and all of Velvet Steel's archive shows, and all of the Fabulous D's archive shows, all of those unique, unbelievable shows that you cannot get anywhere else but at JuicedTalk.com. JuicedTalk.com. And talking about getting juiced here at the Timmy Nolan's with me green beer, and I wish that the artist D and the Anne Marie, I wish you were here having a one with me. I would lift up a glass for me with together, and let's go now to another cut from Dara O'Brien.
Because you were younger and getting laid more often doesn't mean the place is better off, right? Ridiculous notions like that. But stuff changes. Attitudes change, values change. Even as a comedian, you occasionally come across something, you make a joke that, you know, gets you into trouble because the attitudes have changed. I did a joke last year, and this is not a good joke. I have no excuses. It's a terrible joke, right? I'm just offering it as Exhibit A. It was about the musical Billy Elliot. And what was the composer's inspiration for the music? The joke was, Elton John, do you think he saw a little of himself in Billy Elliot? In a way, you know, the whole Billy Elliot thing, again, the reason I backed down so fast on that, was because I received one letter of support, right, that says, to whom it concerns, we, the undersigned, are a group of concerned citizens living in a border region of Northern Ireland. We are writing to express our support for Mr. O'Brien with regard to his comments on the link between paedophilia and homosexuality. My comments on the link. I made a joke about Elton John. I didn't stop a show and go, hang on, wait a minute. Gays and our kids. Who's keeping an eye on that? That's all I said. No doubt he is being targeted at the moment by the international gay mafia. What a fantastically brilliant paranoid phrase that is. I wanted to write off and go, Jesus, who are they? I think Graham Norton might be one of them, but I can't imagine who the others are. My favourite phrase, we would like to express our full support for his stance against the forces of sodomy.
Well, my father says you're nifty.
If you ever use the phrase forces of sodomy.
And you've heard of Baudelaire, and we both agree that human rights abuses are unfair.
Phrase forces of sodomy.
You understand your feelings,
and you're not afraid to share.
and I think I could do something with your hair.
Forces of sudden.
You smell nice
and you're groovy,
and we both like foreign movies.
My mother says you have that touch of class.
Forces of sudden.
Well, I can see a shining future
where we'll dialogue and nurture.
But there's one last thing I feel I need to ask.
Forces of sudden.
It better be a gay heavy metal band that you're talking about. Yours sincerely, Robert Mugabe.
Do you take it in the air?
Veritas is satire spelled backwards. With a V for victory.
Give me another beer, Don. Another beer. Green. Green, give me another green beer. Tom Savino drinking his beers here at Timmy Nolan's in Toluca Lake. And speaking of taking it up the taking it up the ass, we as a American people have been taking it up the ass by a fine Irish gentleman, O'Donnell Trump. Yes, he's been giving it to us, you know, up the ass and up the arse and everything, all everywhere. And we've accepted it, so, you know, I guess we are into that kind of stuff. We can turn the tables. We can turn the tables. We haven't yet, though. We haven't yet. We haven't learned our lesson. And we keep letting him rise to the top, so to speak. O'Donnell is rising to the top and on the top and all. But we are taking it. When will we stop taking it? When will we stop? This is nothing. This is this is not to say anything against the fine joys of exotic sexual practices of any nature, but just the metaphor that we are and have been fucked by Mr. O'Donnell Trump. We rue the day you went on the stump and laughed over our shoulders and exposed our rump to take your lies as you pump and bump.
Oh my God!
And we are, we still just buy his BS. We still buy his BS.
It's never ending, your bullshit.
Used to be funny. Somehow, sometimes I feel responsible in a way, because as many satirists, I know I miss tremendously that television show with Jon Stewart.
Here it is, here.
Comedy Central. Well, I mean, it's on Comedy Central, but it's The Daily Show. And apparently it's still on. And no offense to the person that has taken over, but I do miss Jon Stewart. And he had already announced his retirement, and then had second thoughts when he heard Donald Trump was running for president. And I understand that. Any comedian, any satirist, just relish his engagement in the political process, just because it's so easy to joke about. But perhaps we are somewhat to blame. Somewhat to blame, satirists and humorists, joking about him and tweeting about him and giving him more publicity. We've created a monster. I know that a person very, very closely related to his getting involved with the presidential campaign, and then who later quit because he didn't think that the whole group of people involved were serious about it, but he knew that it would be a kind of stir the pot in the social arena, and later quit when people started taking it seriously. That is, people close to the campaign started taking it seriously, and he said, "No, what? We didn't really mean to do this." And well, we've created a Frankenstein. A Frankenstein. Speaking of Stein, give me another Stein of lager, please. I'll have one of those dark Guinness beer. Give me one of those. Give me a Guinness, and I'll see if I can drink as many Guinness as I can and make the Guinness Book of Records. What is the Guinness Book of Records for Guinness? Anybody know? Well, maybe Deirdre knows. I love that name. And we have a comedian, who will join us now, Miss Deirdre O'Kane. Deirdre O'Kane, let's go to her now.
Actually, I went there once and found not one emerald. Not one. No emeralds. No emeralds at all. It's a trade description to get them on the phone. Now, from the island with no emeralds at all, the No Emerald Isle, here comes Deirdre O'Kane!
How are you? I had a baby yesterday. I'm exhausted. I've discovered that when you have a baby, people really only want to know two things. What did you have? I had an epidural. And has it changed you in any way? Well, yes, it has. I now speak like this all the time. Yes, I do. Because if you don't animate yourself, the child is not remotely interested. But once you start to speak like this, it's very hard to stop. It seriously affected my flirting. You're a lovely boy. Aren't you a lovely boy? What am I going to do with you? I don't know where I got the patience to get through the 9 months of pregnancy. I have to say, I found it interminable. The drinking for two nearly killed me. The only thing that really saved me was that several of my closest friends were pregnant at the same time with me, and that was really nice. It was myself, Gwyneth Paltrow, Courtney Cox and Deborah Messing. We used to meet in Café Rouge once a week for a cup of coffee. Well, they'd have herbal tea, I'd have coffee, a little glass of wine. Now, I have to say, to be fair to Gwyneth, she was determined from the very beginning to go through the birth without the use of drugs. Now, personally, I think that's a slap in the face for science. Do you know what I mean? There's science saying, come here to me, you're not going to believe what we're after coming up with for you. We have a drug that can paralyze you from the waist down. There's no need for you to be feeling pain. And there's you saying, not at all, science, you're all right. I'm going to breathe my way through this one. Now, don't get me wrong, if you can do it, I am full of admiration. But when they said to me, will you be requesting an epidural? I said, I will. And if you could throw in a bit of heroin, that'd be marvellous. But not Gwyneth. Not Gwyneth. She was going to yoga her way through that birth if it killed her. And it very nearly did kill her. A 10-pound apple she delivered in the end. Now, I had a daughter called Holly. That wasn't easy to deliver either. Gwyneth's had a second child since called Moses. Were you aware of that? Apple of Moses. There's a touch of the basket case about it, isn't there? Now, to be fair, it's not easy choosing the name of your child. I did everything at the time to try to dissuade Gwyneth from calling that child Apple. She didn't want to know. And in the end, I thought, even if herself and Christy loved the name Apple, wouldn't you think they'd have the same conversations that all would-be parents have? Do you know, what if she's heavy? They'll call her the Big Apple. She's a hit with the boys, they call her Apple Tart. Do you know, she gets a sexual disease, Crab Apple. Oh, and isn't it ironic that that gets a clap? In your own time, I thought that was fantastic, person. But anyway, yes. And you see, Manuel, we may clap and have a good laugh. It could happen to any one of us. It only takes one bad apple. Do you see what I mean? You could go on and on. It's endless. It is hard choosing the name of your child, though. I have to say, shortly before my own child was due, I was doing a bit of shopping in Hammersmith, and I happened to run into Michael Douglas. Or as they say in Spain, Miguel Douglas. And Michael's wife, Catherine, had a baby not long before that. And I said to him, Michael, how did Catherine get on? How did it go for her? He said, oh, Jesus, dear, you're not good. Not good. He said, do you remember the beginning of Saving Private Ryan? He said, well, it was worse than that. And then he said, why don't you ask her yourself? She's over in Argos. So over I went to Argos, and there was Catherine poring over a catalogue. She was looking at the jewellery. She has a thing for those rope chains and high gold. She loves them. But anyway, she had two kids with her. She had Karis in one arm, she had Dylan hanging out the other, and she was looking wretched. I said to her, Catherine, you look fantastic. How are you? And she said to me, oh God, dear, she said, I'm exhausted. She said, Michael, or as they say in Spain, Miguel, is absolutely useless with the kids. She said, he has Dylan sitting in front of a video from morning till night. Do you know that the first words out of that child's mouth are agreed is good? I said, Catherine, that's dreadful, but I said, at least your eyelid surgery is a total success. You look 3 years younger. And I said, at least you have a bit of dosh. Dosh helps. Oh, she said, we haven't got that much dosh, Deirdre. It's several years since Michael made a movie. Two kids in the creche is no joke. Oh, it's all very well having a mansion in Mallorca, but if you can't afford the flights, what's the point? Oh, she said, to be perfectly honest with you, since I won my Oscar for Chicago, Michael thinks that I can pay for everything. I said, well, Catherine, call me old-fashioned, but he sounds like a bit of a bollocks. I said, listen, if you're really stuck, I have a very good accountant. His name is Eddie. And she said, oh, I know Eddie. I'm a big fan. She didn't say any more than that because she found the Welsh accent really difficult. But also at that precise moment, didn't Argos call out her number and up came the rope chains and the barbecue that she bought. She told me later she had to put the barbecue together herself. Came in a million pieces. Oh, she said, Michael, or as the saints by Miguel, wouldn't have a clue how to put that together, she said, because he had one of those privileged childhoods, the downside of which is that you can't buy anything in Argos. On a positive note, she said, the great thing about here is you hand over your money, but when they call out your number, you think you've won a raffle. I have to say, I walked away from Catherine that day. Do you know her? Have you ever met her? No. She's lovely, but she's very wearing. She's one of those people, she unloads all of her problems on it. Do you know what I mean? So by the time you walk away from her, you're exhausted and you're thinking, Jesus, what's wrong with me? I walked away from her and I felt like doing a Snora Jones on it and just taking a little kip for myself. I went to see Snora Jones in concert recently. She is the only performer that I have ever seen take a kip in the middle of her own gig. We will never produce a Snora Jones type performer in Ireland. It's absolutely not possible because she's too cool. She's so cool, she's so sexy and breathy. She must be turning herself on with every bar. But we're not cool, do you know what I mean? No, we're natural. That's our greatest asset. That's why you'll never see a decent family photograph in any home in Ireland. Because we're too self-conscious. There's always somebody making the big face. You know, they just can't take it seriously, so they think, I'll make a face here. It's disastrous. We don't even like it when somebody tries to be cool. Do you know what I mean? The only reason Bono gets away with it is because he's trying to save the world. If he wasn't, we'd annihilate him. So we'll never have a Snora Jones and we'll never have a James Blunt either. Poor James. What went wrong there? Could you imagine if an Irish artist attempted to begin anything with the line, my life is brilliant, the reaction would be, is it? Well, we'll soon fuck that up for you. Went home. Thank you and good night.
Veritas is satire spelled backwards. With a V for victory.
Should I go to college or not?
What's the best way to advertise my business?
Mo, Tibetan divination. Through an exclusive arrangement with Organ Yeshe, Tibetan divination expert of the Buddhist Rime Order, Savino Veritas listeners can get their tough questions answered. Through the universal synchronicity of Manjushri's consciousness, seer of all, past, present, and future, Organ Yeshe reads your question and rolls the blessed red dice for you. In his deep, mantra-induced meditative trance, Organ Yeshe internalizes your question, throws the sacred dice, and based on Manjushri's guidance, which Yeshe will invoke for you, captures the emergence of your answer. The price? Contribute what you can at $5 or more. Deposit your offering to the PayPal account of tjsavino22@gmail.com. Again, deposit $5 or what you can to the PayPal account of tjsavino22@gmail.com. Write a well-thought-out question and send it to tjsavino22@gmail.com, along with your self-selected $5 or more contribution to the PayPal account of tjsavino22@gmail.com. Savino Veritas will dispatch your answer via email within 3 days of submission. Mo, Tibetan Divination.
Can I trust my boyfriend to be faithful?
What's the best month for the wedding, May or June?
Will I ever get pregnant?
Who's the best candidate to fill the supervisor's job? May I count on my best pitcher to win this game?
How much should I gamble at the casino?
Do I need to go see the doctor about this condition?
Is Atlanta the right place for me to move?
Should we increase our homeowner's insurance?
If I get the job, will it help our relationship?
Will marital therapy keep us together?
Where should I look for my lost ring?
Will I ever find it? Can I?
Can I?
Should he?
Should he?
Will they?
Will they?
When will?
When will?
Can?
Can?
Questions.
Questions.
Money.
Love.
Rennies. Mo.
Mo.
Mo. Tibetan Divination.
I know I had a few Guinness, maybe too many, and my thinking might be impaired. But not only do we get Mo for $5, we'll throw in Larry and Curly. Mo, Tibetan Divination. Seriously, friends. Seriously, give it a shot. You will be unbelievably surprised. For $5 or whatever you'd like to contribute, write a well-thought-out question, send it to tjsavino22@gmail.com, tjsavino22@gmail.com. And along with that question, submit $5 or what you can to the PayPal account at tjsavino22@gmail.com. And Organ Yeshe will invoke the power of Manjushri and the Jungian synchronicity principle and find that answer for you. Give it a shot. You will be surprised. Mo, Tibetan Divination, tjsavino22@gmail.com. And this is TJ Savino, way beyond 22, at the Timmy Nolan's in the Toluca Lake, and we're having our time of the night here with our Guinness and our wonderful music and singers in the background singing live from Timmy Nolan's. Come in. I've already bought 22 drinks for people who heard this and stopped by. But I still, the Savino Veritas funds are running low, but we still have enough. And on that note, let's get to the man who calls himself the Irish Nigger. Or something like that. And his name is... And don't say, I didn't call him that. I didn't call him that. He calls himself that. Reginald Hunt. Reginald Hunt. Let's go to him now. Reggie?
How's that for a segue?
You can't always make them come where you at. Like, I was in Ireland. And I had, you know, done my gig. And I was outside having a smoke. Couple of friends around. This drunk Irish dude, short, walks right past us. Freezes and walks right up to me and says, "Geez, you're a big mean looking cunt." And my friends started getting pissy, like, hey, hey, hey. And I was like, no, relax. It's all right. I speak Irish. What he is trying to say is that you look like an interesting person. Maybe we can be friends. So I said, how you doing, you drunk patty bastard? And he went, hey! He's my manager now. And you know, I was drinking with him later, and he said something to me that a lot of white Irish men have said to me since. Like, and they say it warmly, like, you know, like you should be charmed or something like by this. He says, hey, Reg, you know Irish people are considered the niggers of Europe. No wonder it feels like home. I told my dad that shit, my father, 92 years old. I said, hey, Dad, you know Irish people are considered the niggers of Europe. And he said, God damn it, white folks won't let black folks have nothing.
The fine wine of select gripes. Savino Veritas.
I hope you're having as much fun as we are here at Timmy Nolan's in Toluca Lake, which is right next to Burbank in Los Angeles, California. Usually we come from Lion's Den Studios, where we're not soundproof, we're not foolproof, we are 90 proof. And we are not from Lion's Den Studios tonight. We're here live from Timmy Nolan's. But we still are 90 proof. Maybe not that much, because tonight we're drinking Guinness, and I'm going for the record, the Guinness record. The record in Guinness, how many is I'm on my 27th Guinness, but I just drink by shot glass. Does that count? So the shot counts. There's a three-pointer. Yes. I, by the way, in case you don't know, I invented the three-pointer in basketball. I used to play basketball. And I am height-challenged or vertically challenged. I guess you could say I'm a vertically challenged person. And as the basketball players became taller and taller, I had to revert to other alternatives. That was pretty quick, so I did get past defenders very often, but usually when I drove to the basket, I was, stopped, smashed by people twice my height. So I invented a shot that was, now they call it going downtown, three pointers. I got as far away from the tall people as possible and just shot that thing with an arc, and thus the three-pointer was invented. And I did that back when I was on the Lakers, and this is back when the Lakers were in Minnesota. Back when the Lakers were in Minnesota. Speaking of which, when I think of Minnesota, I must tell you I am very disappointed that one of my heroes, one of the people who I played on the show numerous times, and his name is Al Franken. He's Senator Al Franken. And he apparently is supporting this bill, the Monsanto-backed DARK Act. And I noticed that the other senators from Minnesota, the other senator from Minnesota, is also supporting the DARK Act. And I guess the constituents in Minnesota it's an agricultural region. I guess I should know more about this. But they back this Monsanto BS.
You don't even know what you're talking about. Try getting it out. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Donald Trump, for joining us with that comment and many of your other stupid comments and things like that. This is Tom Savino, Tom Savino from Savino Veritas. Remember, you can hear Savino Veritas as you are right now every Thursday evening, 11 p.m. Eastern Time, 8 p.m. Pacific Time, and all the other international times in between. And you can hear it 24/7 at the Too Cool for School website, Juiced Talk, JUICEDTALK.com, JuicedTalk.com, JuicedTalk.com. In the wake of in the morning with the dew in my shoes, and they do it. By the way, the that little phrase that I say over and over again, my first wife was Irish. She was Irish American. O'Connor was her name, O'Connor. And her dad and mom were very Irish. I mean, my wife was born in the United States of America. She's American. She's American, American. But her parents were from Ireland. And they had real interesting ways of phrasing things. And they were kind of poetic as they went about their day. And her dad told me at a dinner one evening when he found out we were about to get married, he and I went for dinner, and he said, "Dumb in Ireland, I'd wake up in the morning with the dew in me shoes," and well, the rest is here. That dew in me shoes is a famous phrase in my life. It was very sad, a lot of sad things with him and my first wife. The saddest thing is that we got married. But beyond that, was some tragic situations. The night of my bachelor party, as we earlier spoke of Frank Cotola. Frank Cotola was at my bachelor's party, among other people, and as I got home at 7 in the morning, and my parents had, I was living at my parents' house at the time, and got the word to call Terry immediately, and I called Terry O'Connor, who was not at my bachelor party. That's the traditional way to do things in a bachelor party. I wonder if that's changed these days. Do you take your fiancé to a bachelor party? I hope not. Well, who knows? Who knows? Things have changed these days. Anyway, I get home from the bachelor party, and I am totally hungover. And but that was the least of, compared to what happened to Terry's father, which was that he died the night of my bachelor party. And I do have nothing to say about that other than it happened and it was tragic. But I remember him. He was a hard-working man, and he'd wake up in the morning with the dew in his shoes, and he said to him, and anyway, may you rest in peace, Mr. O'Connor. And I don't know what happened to Mrs. O'Connor. She may still be with us in this realm. I don't know. I don't know what happened to my ex-wife. She refuses to answer my emails and calls to her realty agency. If you're listening, Terry O'Connor, I think I know you're remarried. I wish we could bury the hatchet and just be friends. And I need to say I'm sorry about a lot of things. I'm sorry. I am sorry we got married, but, you know, that's at least half my fault. But other things for which I'm sorry that I'd like to tell you, if you're listening, you too can reach me at tjsavino22@gmail.com. tjsavino22@gmail.com. Also, people, you may reach me by following me at tjsavino Twitter. On Twitter, you may follow me at TJ Savino. On Twitter, you may follow me at TJ Savino. We hear it, Timmy Nolan's on a St. Patrick's night, but let's go now to another Irish comedian, Dusty Young. Dusty Young.
I love you. Your applause is a credit to your intelligence. He has told you, of course, I am Irish by a friend of my father's. He's dead now. Do you know what killed my father? Drink and sex. He couldn't get either, so he shot himself. Well, he tried to hang himself, but he made the rope too long and broke both his legs. And then the family turned up for the wake. Do you know what a wake is? It's a bit like this, only a lot livelier. Now, I come from a little place you maybe have heard of. I come from Dublin. That's a city with a very dense population. Up with Irish humour. Everybody tells their Irish jokes, don't they? But see, we're simple people, the Irish. In Ireland, we think that 2 and 3 is 6. You know it's 5. But you worry about it, and we don't. Oh. Do you know, we're the most laid-back people in the world, the Irish. I mean, we take Valium as a stimulant. If an Irishman a couple of sleeping pills, he wakes up. And all Dublin men are workaholics. If you mention work, we get drunk. But there is no work in Dublin, thanks be to God. I must be honest, I don't like not working, because when you're not working, you never know when you're finished. In Dublin, we don't have a village idiot. Everybody takes it in turns. Can you tell me why you put a sell-by date on sour cream? Now, I've got a brother at Dublin University. Well, he's in a bottle in the biology department, he said. Well, he's what the Irish call a premature baby. He was born before his mother got married. Do you know, he was born with broken fingers trying to hang on till after the wedding. We're now in Dublin City. We're trying to find a place to park. He's going to stop in front of the hotel. The Gresham said, you can't park there. You get done, Mick. You're on double yellow lines. Ah, no, no. Look at the new sign. It says, fine for parking. I said to this priest, when we call him the guards, I says, can I park here? He said, no, you can't. I think he said can't. He said, you're on double yellow lines. In Ireland, 1 yellow line is no parking at all, and 2 yellow lines is no parking at all, at all. Walked into this pub and through, because there's a fellow lying across the bar, completely unconscious, out for the count. I said to the barber, I said, God, he's had a skinful. Oh, he's only had the one. I said, can I have one over here? And he went, that's not the funny part. There's 2 lads next to me eating sandwiches. The barber said, lads, you can't eat your own food in here. So they swapped. That's not the funny part either. In the corner of this bar, they have a big jukebox and there's a song playing. And he said, Mick, that's not King Cole. He said, who is it then? He said, Paddy, how are you going on with your wife? He said, my wife's an angel. Ah, you're lucky, mine's still alive, he said. Captain, what would you call your wife if you came home at night and found her in bed with your best friend? He said, a lesbian. Don't encourage me. She said, Paddy, she said, if you won the football pools, would you still love me? He said, I would, but I'd miss you. He took her out last week for tea and biscuits. She enjoyed that. She'd never given blood before. Well, it was her birthday. He bought her a video record. Oh, she was nice. She said, oh, Paddy, where'd you get the money for this? He said, I sold the television set. She gave him a video of their wedding and he plays it backwards to watch himself walking out of the Church of St. Anne. He lived in the house and the phone's ringing. He said, hello, boy. He said, hello, is that 777-7777? Yes. He says, could you dial 999 for me? I've got my finger stuck in the 7. Well, there's a knock on his door, and there's a policeman there. He said, on your way back to the pub, Mick, did you save a man from drowning in the river? I did. He said, I've got bad news for you. He hung himself. He said, no, I put him up there to dry. And then there's my sister got 3 kids. She won't have the 4th. She's terrified to have the 4th child. She's read in some magazine that every 4th child born in the world is Chinese. Oh, she said, I'm not cooking rice for one. Oh. My brother-in-law Seamus, he's Irish as well, by the way. In fact, he's very Irish. He thinks twice before he says nothing. Do you know he fell asleep with his head under the pillow when the fairies took all his teeth out? He's got a marvellous hobby now. He breeds pit bull terriers for racing. They're not very fast, but they're bloody bad losers. Out and chop, we like winning. I want to leave you my favourite joke. We're getting a quote to paint Blackpool Tower gold. That's up on the coast of England. They got 3 quotes. The first quote came from a little Welsh company. He said to the Welsh lad, what's your quote? We'd like £3,000. He said, marvellous. Can we have a breakdown of the figures with the council? He said, we'd like £1,000 labour, £1,000 material, and £1,000 profit. We'll let you know in 2 days. Second firm was an English firm. Your quote, we'd be looking for £6,000. How do you break down to 6,000? We'd like £2,000 labour, he said, £2,000 material and £2,000 profit. We let you know in 2 days. The third firm was Irish. Then Mick, he said, we'd be looking for 9,000. He said, how do you break down the 9,000? Then he said, 3,000 for you. Said 3,000 for me, and we'll give the job to the Welsh fella. Well, thanks very much for listening. Bye bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, a great Irish American, Mr. George Carlin at the National Press Club. Genius. Listen to this.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's have a warm National Press Club welcome for Mr. George Carlin.
Thank you. Thank you all. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you for the fine introduction, Larry, and thank you for the members of the head table. Thanks for those of you who accepted the invitation to come here today or volunteered. And thanks for the invitation in general. I can assure you I am properly nervous, not because of simply my esteemed audience, but because this is a setting I'm not completely familiar with, and as we all know, anything new is to be feared and dreaded. And just to relieve you of any outstanding anxieties, I can assure you that I'm not here to advance any political, social, or environmental cause. I am, in fact, blessedly agenda-free. I don't want to save the river, I don't want to save the bay, I don't want to save the canyon, the whale, the wetlands, the rainforest, or the flying spotted dwarf something or other. I don't want to save the children above all, frankly. Frankly, I don't care about many of those things, and between you and me, those battles were lost a long time ago. I'm not interested in freeing someone, boycotting something, or preventing anything. I am interested in keeping my lunch inside my mouth if I can. And I don't want to make something optional. I refuse to wear ribbons of any color. You might say I'm just here to help define deviancy down. To be honest, there aren't many things I do believe in, but high among them would be friendship, family ties, and romantic love. I think those things can take you a long way. For the record, the only worthy cause I have devoted time to is a little-known place that does wonderful work, St. Anthony's Home for the Visually Unpleasant. It's run by the Little Sisters of the Heinous. And in fact, they operate a number of facilities: the Rochester Home for the Permanently Disheveled, the New England Haven for the Occasionally Coherent, and the Catholic Shelter for those who up until a year ago seemed to be doing just fine. Now, one of the things I wanted to do before I got too far along was to tell you a little more about myself in order to establish some common ground, create perhaps a more permissive environment. And so, with this in mind, and in the spirit of full disclosure, I would like to reveal to you my own remarkably tenuous connections to the press. More accurately, those of my family. And you can relax, none of these connections falls within the editorial area. So, here we go. In the 1930s and 1940s, my father sold newspaper advertising space and was consistently one of the top two or three space salesmen in the country by actual lineage count. He began at the old Philadelphia American, moved to the Bulletin, and ended his career as the national advertising manager of the New York Sun. He also put in some time at the New York Post when it was still a broadsheet, or as my mother used to say, when it was a real newspaper. Not a commie rag. As many of you no doubt know, long before the New York Post was a fascist rag, it was a commie rag. Prior to that, it had been an establishment rag. That's when my dad was there. My mother, manager of the Philadelphia Bulletin's New York office, and later worked in the magazine division of the Hearst Corporation, first at Good Housekeeping and then at Cosmopolitan, once again when it was a real magazine. Now, there is one more member of my family whose press connections I must tell you about, and this is the good one, my Aunt Aggie. This is the connection that gave me standing in the neighborhood, made me a big man on the playground. My Aunt Aggie also worked for the Hearst Corporation, but she worked for Puck the Comic Weekly, the publication that produced the Sunday Funnies every week. Like I said, tenuous stuff. But here's the great thing about Aggie's job. Not only did she bring home the funnies every week, she brought them home 4 weeks early. Are you hearing this? Every week, I had the Sunday Funnies a month before the other kids. And I guess you can realize the power this gave me in the schoolyard. To be able to predict weeks ahead of time precisely the way Mandrake the Magician would escape from the lost cave, or to describe in advance the details of whatever well-deserved catastrophe was next in store for little orphan Annie. Doesn't sound like much today, but in the days before television, and when you're 8 years old, it was power beyond belief. Of course, you had to be careful not to overdo the predictions, and you could never, ever tell the other kids about the great job your Aunt Aggie had. Now, having somewhat successfully established my press credentials, and because you and I have at least one thing in common, which is that all of us deal with language all the time, I thought it might be nice today for me to come to you with some of my language complaints. certainly not to blame them on you, although, of course, you are implicated. And not that you can help it. I mean, the problem is really with the people you cover, the politicians, the celebrities, and the lawyers. And although their level of insincerity is astonishing, it's still kind of fun to hear them talk. In particular, it's fun to listen to Washington talk. Whenever the issue of term limits comes up, I always tell people the only term limits I'm interested in would be to limit some of the terms used by politicians. They speak, of course, with great caution because they must take care not to actually say anything. Proof of this, according to their own words, is that they don't actually say things, they indicate them. As I indicated yesterday, and as the president indicated to me, but sometimes they don't indicate, they suggest. Let me suggest that as I indicated yesterday, I haven't determined that yet. See, they don't decide, they determine. If it's a really serious matter, they make a judgment. I haven't made a judgment on that yet. When the hearings are concluded, I will make a judgment, or I might make an assessment. I'm not sure. I haven't determined that yet. But when I do, I will advise you. They don't tell, they advise. I advised him that I had made a judgment. Thus far, he hasn't responded. They don't answer, they respond. He hasn't responded to my initiative. An initiative is an idea that isn't going anywhere. When he responds to my initiative, I will review his response, take a position, and make a recommendation. See, they don't read, they review. They don't have opinions, they take positions. And they don't give advice, they make recommendations. And so, at long last, after each has responded to the other's initiatives, and each has reviewed the other's responses, and everyone has taken a position, made a judgment, and offered a recommendation, now they have to do something. But that would be much too direct. So instead, they address the problem. We're addressing the problem, and we'll soon be proceeding. That's a big activity here in Washington. Proceeding. They're always proceeding or moving forward. A lot of that goes on. Senator, have you solved that problem? Well, we're moving forward on that. And when they're not moving forward, they're moving something else forward, such as the process. We have to move the process forward so we can implement the provisions of the initiative in order to meet these challenges. No one has problems anymore. Challenges. That's why we need people who can make the tough decisions. Tough decisions like how much soft money can I expect to collect in exchange for my core values? So that... so that I can continue my work in government. Of course, no politician would admit to such a lowly station as working in government, serving the nation. I'm serving the nation. Another favorite distortion is public service. I'm in public service. I like America, don't you? The food is great, but the public service is terrible. Now, folks, a question for you. Do you think it's possible that one of these politicians, whose judgment is so poor that he honestly thinks of himself as serving the nation, might occasionally be expected to indulge in a little patriotism? Huh? What do you think? Well, of course, not only is it possible, it's inevitable, and that's when he's at his very best. That's when he trots out the really good stuff all across this great land of ours, the greatest nation on earth, the greatest nation in the history of the world. And in times of military crisis, you can be sure that someone in a suit in this town will eventually plant himself in front of a camera and carry on a great deal about the most powerful nation on the face of the earth. Now, normally, during peacetime, the politicians will refer to people in the military as our young men and women stationed around the world. But in wartime, they quickly become our brave young fighting men and women stationed halfway around the world in places whose names they can't pronounce, wondering if they'll ever see their loved ones again. For added emotional impact, sons and daughters can always be substituted for men and women. And so I think we can sum this up by saying that where the military is concerned, the extent of a politician's insincerity can be measured by how far around the world our soldiers are stationed and whether or not any of them can pronounce it. Incidentally, another way of expressing this sentiment is to say we're sending our young men and women to places the average American can't find on a map. I've always thought it was kind of funny and somewhat out of character for a politician to go out of his way to point out the low level of American intelligence when indeed his very job depends upon it. It would seem to fly in the face of that other rhetorical standby of theirs, the American people are a lot smarter than they're given credit for. This is said with a straight face, although it is obvious, of course, that the proposition is being stated precisely backwards. But the politicians, God bless them, or something like that, they're at their most entertaining when they're in trouble. When they're in trouble, their explanations usually begin simply with words like miscommunication. What did you do wrong, Senator? Well, it was a miscommunication. Or I was quoted out of context. Better yet, and more ironic, they twisted my words. Such a nice touch. A person who routinely spends his days torturing the language complains, they twisted my words. Then, as the controversy continues to heat up, he moves to his next level of complaint. The whole thing has been blown out of proportion. It's always the whole thing. Apparently, no one has ever claimed that only a small portion of something was blown out of proportion. Has to be the whole thing. That's because now he's feeling the heat. And so, as time passes and more evidence comes in, he suddenly changes directions and tells us, we're trying to get to the bottom of this. Now he's on the side of law and order. It's jiu-jitsu, really. We're trying to get to the bottom of this so we can get the facts out to the American people. That's always a nice touch, American people. In fact, at this point, he might even say, I'm willing to trust in the fairness of the American people. Clearly, he's preparing us for something. And so, when finally all the facts come out and our subject seems quite guilty, he employs that sublime use of the passive voice, mistakes were made. Mistakes were made, don't look at me. Probably someone in my office. Things are moving faster now. Mistakes were made is rapidly overtaken by there is no evidence. No one has proven anything. Eventually, I will be exonerated. I have faith in the American judicial system. And that certain sign that things are closing in, whatever happened to innocent until proven guilty? Whatever happened? Well, nah, yeah. Well, he's about to find out. And we know this must be true because the next thing we hear from him is, I just want to put this thing behind me and get on with my life. I just want to put this behind me. That's an expression we hear a lot these days in all walks of life. From people in all walks of life, usually the person in question has committed some unspeakable act. Yes, it's true, I strangled my wife, shot the triplets, set fire to the house, and sold my young son to an old man on the train. But now I just want to put this thing behind me. Get on with it. That's the problem in this country. Too many people getting on with their lives. I think what we really need more of is ritual suicide. You know? Never mind the press conferences. Get the big knife out of the drawer. Personally, what I want to do is to put this, I want to put this thing behind me and get on with my life, thing behind me and get on with my life. I'll repeat that for you. Personally, I want to put this thing behind me and get on with my life, thing behind me and get on with my life. And just to round out this section, let's hope there's a special place in hell reserved for those who have recently decided to take responsibility for their actions. That's the big thing now, taking responsibility for your actions, like it's a recent discovery, you know. He's taking responsibility for his actions. Well, isn't that wonderful? Ask him if he's willing to take responsibility for my actions, along with my alimony, my car payments, and my gambling debts. Now, continuing with more of these more general language complaints and forgetting the Washington angle for the moment, I'd like to mention America's love affair with euphemisms and euphemistic language. I think Americans have some difficulty dealing with reality and have invented a kind of soft language to protect themselves. And this tendency to euphemize, if that's a verb, increases, it seems, with every generation. Here's an example. There's a well-known condition in combat when a fighting man's nervous system has been stressed to the breaking point and he's either snapped or is ready to snap. In the First World War, that condition was known as shell shock. Simple, honest, direct language, two syllables, shell shock. Almost sounds like the guns themselves. That was over 80 years ago. Then an entire generation passed, and in the Second World War, the very same combat condition was called battle fatigue. Four syllables now, takes a little longer to say, doesn't seem to hurt as much. Fatigue is a nicer word than shock. Shell shock. Battle fatigue. Then we had Korea, 1950, Madison Avenue was riding high, and the very same combat condition was called operational exhaustion. We're up to eight syllables now, and the humanity has been squeezed completely out of the phrase. It's absolutely sterile, operational exhaustion. Sounds like something that might happen to your car. Finally, of course, there was Vietnam, and given the lies surrounding that war, I guess it's no surprise that the very same condition was called post-traumatic stress disorder. Still eight syllables, but we've added a hyphen, and the pain is now completely buried under jargon, post-traumatic stress disorder. I'd be willing to bet that if we'd still been calling it shell shock, some of those Vietnam veterans might have gotten the attention they needed at the time they needed it. But it didn't happen. And one of the reasons, I'm sure, is because of that soft language, the language that takes the life out of life. And it does keep getting worse over time. I'll give you a few more, but less dramatic examples. Sometime during my life, toilet paper became bathroom tissue. I was not consulted on this. It just happened. Sneakers became running shoes, loafers became slip-ons, motels became motor lodges, trailers became mobile homes, truck stops became travel plazas, and used cars became previously owned transportation. Manicurists evolved into nail technicians. At about the same time, store clerks became product specialists and sales associates. Employees became staff. Uniforms became career apparel. Maids became room attendants, and room service became guest room dining. Information turned into directory assistance. Medicine turned into medication. The dump turned into the landfill. Gambling joints turned into gaming resorts. Shacking up, living together, reruns, encores. Encore presentations, forgive me. Monkey bars, pipe frame exercise units. Wife beating became intermittent explosive disorder, and constipation became occasional irregularity. Rainforests and wetlands came into existence because the environmentalists discovered people were not willing to give money to save jungles and swamps. And now, all of this happened in the last 30 years. When I was a young man, if someone got sick, they went to the hospital or they went to the doctor. Now, the health maintenance organization sends them to a wellness center where they consult a healthcare delivery professional. Poor people used to live in slums. Now, the economically disadvantaged occupy substandard housing in the inner cities. And we can't really discuss euphemisms if we don't mention that final taboo, death. Used to be that when an old person died, the undertaker put him in a coffin, and we sent flowers to the funeral home where they held a wake. Then after the funeral, they drove the dead person in a hearse to the cemetery, and his body was buried in a grave. Now, when a senior citizen passes away, the mortician places him in a burial container, and we send floral tributes to the slumber room, where the grief coordinator supervises the viewing. After the memorial service, the funeral coach transports the departed to the Garden of Remembrance, where his remains are interred in his final resting place. Some of this language can make you want to throw up. Well, perhaps engage in an involuntary protein spill. Now, if all of this begins to put you in mind of so-called politically correct language or politically correct speech, then you and I are on the same track. So let's visit that playground of guilty white liberals, the land of the politically correct. In recent years, the PC folks have found some new ways of shading the truth in order to make people feel better, especially minorities. One of the newer phrases making the rounds is happens to be.
He happens to be black. I have a friend who happens to be black.
Oh, I see. Yes, yes.
Like it's an accident, you know. Happens to be black. Yes, he happens to be black.
I see, I see, I see.
He had two black parents? Yes, that's right. Two black parents. Yes.
I see. I see.
And they had sex? Oh, indeed they did.
Yeah,
I see. So where does the surprise part come in? I should think it would be more unusual if he just happened to be Scandinavian. Another favorite term, recently favorite term, is openly. Openly gay. I have a friend who's openly gay. But that's the only minority they use that for. You know, you wouldn't say someone was openly black. Well, maybe James Brown. Yes. James Brown. Yes. Or Louis Farrakhan. Louis Farrakhan is openly black. Colin Powell is not openly black. Colin Powell is openly white. He just happens to be black. And while we're at it, when did the word urban become synonymous with the word black? Did I sleep through this, perhaps? Urban styles, urban trends, urban music. I was not consulted on this at all again. Didn't get an email, didn't get a fax, didn't get a postcard. That's fine, let them go. So I would like to tell you how I handle some of these speech issues concerning minorities. First of all, I say black. I say black because most black people prefer black. I don't say people of color because it's dishonest. It means precisely the same thing as colored people, which is an insult. So if you're not willing to say colored people, you shouldn't be willing to say people of color. And besides, to me, the whole idea of color seems a bit specious, really. I mean, what should we call white people? People of no color? Isn't pink a color? And in fact, white people are not really white at all. They're different shades of pink and olive and beige. In other words, they're colored. And black people are rarely black. I see mostly various shades of brown and tan, and in fact, some light-skinned black people are darker than the darkest white people. I'm sorry, lighter than the darkest white people. Look how dark the people in India are. They're dark brown, but they're considered white. May I see the color chart, please? People of color is an awkward phrase that obscures meaning rather than enhancing it. What shall we call fat people? People of size? I also don't say African Americans. I find it cumbersome and confusing. Which part of Africa are we talking about? Egypt? Egypt is in Africa, but Egyptians aren't black. They're like the people in India. They're dark brown white people. But they're Africans. So why wouldn't an Egyptian citizen who becomes an Egyptian who becomes a U.S. citizen be called an African American? The same would apply to South Africa. Suppose a white racist from South Africa becomes an American citizen. Couldn't he call himself an African American? If for no other reason than just to bother black people. And what about a black person born in South Africa who becomes an American citizen? Is he an African American or is he a South African American? Or is he simply a South African American African American? You know, it's just so much more tedious liberal labeling. Liberals should be taught that labels divide people, and I think we could probably do with fewer labels, not more. Now, one more group, the Indians. I call them Indians because that's what they are. They're the Indians. There's nothing wrong with the word. First of all, it's important to know that Indian, that word, probably does not derive from Columbus believing he had reached India in 1492. India was called Hindustan. More likely, the word derives from Columbus's description of the people he found here. He was an Italian who spoke very poor Spanish, and in his written accounts, he called the Indians una gente indios, a people in God. In God, in Dios, Indians. It's a perfectly noble thing. And I simply can't justify this awkward phrase, Native Americans. First of all, they're not natives. They came here from Asia over the Bering Land Bridge. In fact, there are no natives anywhere in the world. Everyone is from somewhere else. All people are refugees, emigrants, or aliens. If there are natives anywhere, it would have to be people still living in the Great Rift Valley in Africa. So everyone is just visiting. So much for native. As far as calling them Americans is concerned, well, how can I say this? We steal their hemisphere, destroy 500 cultures, kill 20 million, stick the rest of them on the worst land we can find, and then as a special bonus, we name them after ourselves. It's embarrassing. It's just embarrassing. The truth is, most Indians are insulted by the term Native American. The American Indian movement will tell you that. If you wish to please Indians, try calling them by their traditional names, Pawnee, Mohawk, Navajo, Seminole, and so on. Now, just rounding out this theme and to make you a little more uncomfortable, here are a few further examples of tortured modern language designed to soften reality, make people feel good, and in general dress things up a little. Somewhere over the years, the word cripple has been lost. We don't have cripples anymore. Turns out we never did. All this time, they were physically challenged. It's an attempt to make people feel better. Physically challenged. And how's this one? Differently abled. And if you insist on using differently abled, then you must include all of us. We're all differently abled. Each of us can do things the other can't. Differently abled. The word crippled is not a dishonorable word. There's no shame in it. Jesus healed the cripples. He didn't engage in rehabilitative strategies for the physically disadvantaged. And we have then this continuing problem with the word fat. I use that term because that's what fat people are. They're fat. That's why we call them fat people. They're not large, they're not stout, they're not chunky, hefty, or plump, and they're not big-boned. Dinosaurs are big-boned. And they're not necessarily obese. Obese is a medical term. And they're not overweight. Overweight implies there is some correct weight. There is no correct weight. Heavy is also a misleading term. An aircraft carrier is heavy. It's not fat. Only people are fat, and that's what fat people are. They're fat. They're not exempt. They're not, for example, gravitationally disadvantaged. I offer no apology for this, by the way. It's not intended as criticism or insult. It's simply descriptive language. I'm not comfortable with euphemisms. I prefer seeing things the way they are, not the way some people wish they were. Midgets and dwarfs are midgets and dwarfs. They're not little people. Infants are little people. Leprechauns are little people. Midgets and dwarfs are midgets and dwarfs. They don't get any taller by calling them little people. I wish their lives were different. I wish they didn't have to walk around staring at crotches all day. But I cannot fix that, and I'm not going to lie about what they are. There are some people who playfully refer to them as vertically challenged. They're not vertically challenged. The flying Walendas were vertically challenged. The people who built the Empire State Building were vertically challenged. No shame in midgets and dwarves. I do have a closing. I realize my time is a little longer than I expected. May I do this closing poem? This, thank you, Larry. This is Try Stopping Me. Now... Thank you. This is just a poem I've written recently. It's called I'm a Man for the Millennium, and it's I'm a Man for the Millennium, digital and smoke-free. I've been inputted, outsourced, uplinked, and downloaded. I have software on my hard drive, and I can give you a gigabyte in a nanosecond. I'm factory-authorized, returnable, fully equipped, built to last, and I'm definitely biodegradable. My output is down, but my income is up. I'm tanned, rested, and market-tested, user-friendly, and lactose-intolerant. A diversified, multicultural, postmodern deconstructionist. I'm a cutting-edge, state-of-the-art, high-concept rageaholic, and I have a love child who sends me hate mail. I'm an alpha male on beta blockers, a bottom feeder and a top gun, a Bigfoot rainmaker. I give soft money with hard cash, and my revenue stream has a cash flow of its own. I'm ahead of the curve, riding the wave and pushing the envelope. I'm on board, on point, on message, but off drugs. I take power naps. I take victory laps. I've got a personal trainer, a personal shopper, and a personal agenda. I'm a totally ongoing slam dunk no-brainer with an outreach that's proactive. I eat junk food, I get junk mail, I buy junk bonds, I watch trash sports. I've been dumbed down with smart bombs. I'm in denial, I'm in recovery, but I'm out of the loop. I'm also on the bubble. A high-tech lowlife, anatomically, ecologically, and politically incorrect. An entry-level man with no exit strategy. Low rent, but high maintenance. Upscale, but down home. I got a minivan with a microwave from a megastore in the mini mall. I've been to outer space. I've been to outer space on the internet. I'm a non-believer and an overachiever, emotionally deprived and market-oriented. I have hardcore software because I use the F word in my email. I'm new wave from the old school, and if I'm not at ground zero, you can reach me at square one. I'm gender-specific, voice-activated, capital-intensive, heat-seeking, faith-based, and work-related, but I'm definitely not group-oriented. I'm online, I'm in line, but most of the time I'm out of line. I'm cocked, locked, and ready to rock, rough, tough, and hard to bluff. I put the pedal to the metal, party hardy, and to me, lunchtime is crunch time. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
That was amazing.
Thank you. Is
that
okay?
That was amazing. That was great.
Thank you. Thank you.
Everything got trash, everything got the truth.
Thank you for sharing your St. Patrick's Day evening with us, and I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. And be with us not next Thursday, but the Thursday after, right here on SRN1 at 148.ca/1 for another edition of Savino Veritas at 8 p.m. Pacific Time, 11 p.m. Eastern Time, and all the other international times in between, and 24/7 on the Too Cool for School website, juicedtalk.com. Take care, be safe.
Meeting is adjourned. Oh, I am sorry, sir. I didn't mean to overstep my bounds. You say that.
What?
Meeting is adjourned.
It is?
No, you say that, Governor.
What?
Meeting is adjourned.
It is?
The end. By George, he's got it. It is the end.
Now, that'll be all. Just be sure to lock the door behind you on your way out. Good night.